Hey, it's your friend Chuck with an exciting announcement. Now through July 10th, all gifts supporting our work at the Physicians Committee will automatically be doubled. We're talking dollar for dollar here, up to $500,000. And every one of those dollars goes directly to support our groundbreaking animal-free clinical research. Research, by the way, that's proving plant-based nutrition can reverse chronic illnesses like diabetes, heart disease, and arthritis, all without harming a single animal. Again, your donations will be matched dollar for dollar through July 10th. So please give what you can to help us build a healthier, more compassionate future for us all. Just head to pcrm.org/match or click the link in the episode notes.
Today, on the exam room.
Because I had heard, and you can fact check me here, that the older you get, the harder it is to build the muscle. It's like your body forgets how to build it.
So there is some research to suggest that as you age, your muscles do not respond as well to the protein that you give it at the same level. So if you take a young person and an older person who's eating the same amount of protein, as we age, our muscles don't respond to that as well. So there's some research to suggest that as you age, you should eat slightly more protein. But the caveat is, you can eat as much protein as you like. If you are not strength training, that protein is not doing any good for your muscles. You have to put it to work. It's like you keep pouring fuel in the car, but you're not turning on the engine. It's not going to help you maintain that muscle if you're not actually putting it to work.
Welcome to the Exam Room Podcast, brought to you by the Physicians Committee. Hi, I'm the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll, raising health IQs coast to coast and around the world. Hi to the exam roomies listening in Springfield, Illinois, McKinney, Texas, and Prague, Czech Republic. Wherever you are, we appreciate you helping to make the world a healthier place. This is episode 53 of season 8, number 652 overall. What you eat, it's important. Researchers have proven that time and time again. The healthier your diet, the more likely you are to live a longer life. But it also turns out that one of the biggest predictors of longevity isn't necessarily what's on your plate. In fact, it's what's under your skin. It's your muscles. And that's not to say that eating a healthy diet is not important. Of course it is. It just goes hand in hand with the focus of our conversation today. And we are taking a look at those biceps, those triceps, the quads, the calves, and your grip strength. The last one perhaps being the most important longevity forecaster of all. And Doc Rocks, Dr. Roxy Becker, she's not someone to shy away from muscle building. She is a heck of an athlete, a runner, and avid pickleball player. And she is with us today to share the science of muscles and longevity. And she's got an incredible story of her mom's own transformation that she will be sharing as well. So better late than never? How about better than ever? Because it is never too late to take charge of your health, both through your diet and a healthy dose of muscle building. So live from Green Fair Organic Cafe in Herndon, Virginia, just outside the nation's capital, this is Muscles and Maximizing Your Lifespan right here on the Exam Room. Here we are at Green Fair Organic Cafe and Restaurant in Herndon, Virginia, one of the only organic, salt, oil, and sugar-free restaurants that I know of, 100% plant-based on the face of the earth. And we just got through eating, peeling back the curtain before we started the show. I tell you guys all the time to come out and try the quinoa with the baked tofu. Dr. Becker, my guest today, she had it for the very first time. Before I formally introduce you, what was your opinion?
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Did anybody else have that tonight? Was it pretty good? All right, see, it kind of audio and you're off camera, so woo, you know, play it up like, there we go. That's what I'm talking about. It's good stuff. So if you're ever in the neighborhood by Dulles Airport, please check out Green Fair. But the reason why we're talking tonight is not just about the quinoa and the tofu, which are delicious, but We're here to talk about building muscles and longevity and strength at any age to really healthfully age into your golden years. And it's never too late to start. And I know that Dr. Becker, your knowledge on the subject is truly delicious. It is like candy canes on Christmas, to borrow your line again.
I think some people remember that line.
Some people,
we had some laughs there.
I love it. You're never going to live that down.
Never.
But seriously, like we focus on like a lot of different things when it comes to longevity. Like, should we just supplement and take like 50 different pills per day? And, you know, that's the key to longevity. Is it green tea? Is it going out for a walk? But more and more, we're finding that really strength training and making sure that you're in peak physical condition is really the key to seeing how many trips around the sun you can get.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. And of course, it's not one thing. It's the nutrition, the exercise, the sleep. You have to take into account all these factors. But we often underestimate the role that exercise, cardiovascular fitness, strength, muscle mass plays in longevity. And so that's what we're talking about today.
What is it about the muscles that lend themselves so well to longevity, right?
Yeah.
You know, do you have to go to the gym and bang and clang to be around well into your 90s and even triple digits?
Well, you don't have to go to the gym, but strength and muscle mass are key for healthy aging. And we're all going to age, it's inevitable, but the rate at which we age and the rate at which we lose our physical function is largely dependent on our habits. And that's such an empowering message. That's so exciting. There's so much that we can do to slow down our aging. And what's really important to know is something called sarcopenia. Have you heard of sarcopenia?
I have, but why don't you enlighten us?
It's not like the H2O thing where I tricked you in one of our last episodes. We're not doing that again.
Still
there's
mad at
no
you
trickery
for that.
Here.
Still mad at you for that.
But sarcopenia is an age-related loss of muscle mass and strength. And that's really important as we age, because once we lose our muscle mass and our strength, we sort of reach a level where we can't perform our basic activities of daily life, our ADLs. And so you'll see that when it comes to both strength and muscle mass, we kind of peak in our 30s, and then it's a bit of a slow decline down until 90s, 100s. I don't know if anyone here is above 100, but it's a slow peak until we are no longer able to care for ourselves and be able to do these activities of daily living, like cleaning, cooking, gardening, doing all the things we love. And what we found is that the more strength you have and the more muscle mass that you have in middle age, the slower that you decline. So it's kind of like Peter Attia has this wonderful analogy. We're all jumping off a building in a paraglider.
Wonderful analogy. We're all jumping off a building.
We're all going to hit the ground at some point. There's great. Good news in there somewhere. But we're all jumping off a building. We're all declining. But if you focus on strength and building muscle mass, it's like jumping off a 50-story building as opposed to a 15-story building. Mm. So we're all going to decline eventually, but the rate at which is so much within our control.
Well, I think
it starts with a strong body.
And the proof is in the pudding, because I know that you are the queen of working out. You get up very early in the day to do it. Would you guys believe she's 73 years old? Neither would I.
Neither should you.
No. Is that to say, though, like if you don't start to build your muscles at middle age, like there's not much you can do, say, when you've already hit your 70s, your 80s?
No.
Okay.
It is never too late to start. And that is the key message that you need to take away from this. It is never too late to start. From the research, we do research in people who are in their 30s, people who are in their 70s, average age of 80 even, and we see that you can still put on muscle, you can still build strength no matter what age you start.
Is it truly harder, though, the older you get?
I don't think so.
No. All right, who wants to go to the gym after this? Anybody?
We got one hand, man, and that hand went on fast.
She's like, yeah.
We've had our protein. We've had our tofu.
We're ready to hit the gym after this. We'll do a group exercise class.
No,
that's cool. Because I had heard, and you can fact check me here, that the older you get, the harder it is to build the muscle. It's like your body forgets how to build it, or you aren't eating enough protein or your body just doesn't have enough of it any longer to build those muscles.
Yeah. So there is some research to suggest that as you age, your muscles do not respond as well to the protein that you give it at the same level. So if you take a young person and an older person who's eating the same amount of protein, as we age, our muscles don't respond to that as well. So there's some research to suggest that as you age, you should eat slightly more protein. But the caveat is, you can eat as much protein as you like. If you are not strength training, that protein is not doing any good for your muscles. You have to put it to work. It's like you keep pouring fuel in the car, but you're not turning on the engine. It's not going to help you maintain that muscle if you're not actually putting it to work.
For those who are kind of new to eating this way, who here is new to eating a plant-based diet, new-ish, within the last couple of years? All right, it's okay. Be honest. We're a safe space. All right, there we go. See? There's always something like, don't think you're among friends. Like, there's room for everybody. What are some of the big protein foods? And you can't say tofu and you can't say quinoa because you already gave those two up. What are some of your go-tos?
We did. Well, I do eat a lot of tofu. I can't lie about that. Tempeh is a great, it's also made from soybeans, very high in protein, takes on the flavors of all the marinades that you put it in. Great source of protein. Beans, you can't go a day without beans. May not be the highest protein source, but you're getting the fiber, the antioxidants. It's going to help us recover a lot faster when you're getting beans. And if you are not gluten intolerant, seitan. Have you guys heard of seitan made from wheat, vital wheat gluten? Something like 65 grams a cup or something.
You don't need
a lot of it, but.
Man, that'll do.
Yeah.
Wow.
Those are some good protein sources. But again, we don't have to stress about making sure we're getting enough at every single meal. As long as you eat enough protein throughout the day, you're going to meet your needs.
So I've been doing Maxim Seguin's Fit Vegan program, which is a phenomenal program for body recomposition. And I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to do like a couple extra push-ups. Am I going to be like super jacked? Am I going to be looking like Mr. T back in the day? Is that what's going to happen?
May take more than a couple of push-ups.
Whatever. I want to pivot. I want to talk about something else that, you know, along the fitness line, not necessarily muscle building, but you and I were talking about this on the way over today. And that is this term that I wasn't overly familiar with, maybe a little bit from a YouTube video here and there, but VO2 max.
Yeah.
Like, again, interactive portion of the show. Shout out if you've heard that VO2 max is important for longevity. That's good shouting with your hands. Thanks, guys. There we go. So VO2 max, about half the hands in the room went up. So like half the room is clearly way smarter than I am. That's awesome. VO2 max, what is it? Why is it important?
Yeah, great question. And it has become a buzzword. So I think it's important for all of us to know about. And the American Heart Association actually says that VO2 max is a better predictor of our risk of dying than smoking, high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol. And so we don't give enough importance to our physical fitness. And VO2 max is essentially, in the fancy terms, the rate of oxygen consumption. So your VO2 max is the maximum amount of oxygen that you can use when you're exercising.
Mm.
Okay. We need oxygen so that we can produce energy to move. And it really is one of the best indicators of cardiorespiratory fitness. Why? Well, when we measure it, we put people on a treadmill or a bike, we put this big mask over their mouths, we measure how much oxygen and carbon dioxide they're inhaling and exhaling. And it's such a good marker because it takes so much when we exercise. First, we have to look at how fit are our lungs to breathe in the oxygen. How good is our heart at pumping the blood around to the muscles as we're exercising? How good is our hemoglobin at carrying that oxygen around? How good are our muscles at using that oxygen? So it's a great indicator of our overall fitness. And we see that, does anyone have smartwatches here? Yeah. Have you seen your VO2 max on your smartwatches? You're looking at it now. So our smartwatches can give us an estimate of what it is. It's not quite as accurate as the big fancy testing. But if you look at that, you should see a number somewhere between 20 to 90, right? 20 is more on the lower end, 90 is like an elite athlete. When we look at that number, increasing it by just 3.5, which you can do within 6 weeks very easily, reduces our risk of dying by 20%. I mean, that is huge.
We're talking all-cause mortality here?
Yeah, all-cause.
Right on.
Yeah, risk of dying from anything. And it's so easy to improve our VO2 max. We just need to know what to do.
Well, what do we do, you silly goose? You dangle it out there. Do we have to be like the guys on the treadmill in the gym that are wearing those restrictive masks, looking like they're ready for like a nuclear fallout or something?
Yeah.
How does one go about increasing their VO2 max?
Yeah. So if you think about becoming more efficient at using oxygen, what do you guys think is better? Let's get an audience vote. Either more endurance training, so think about an hour of working on walking or cycling, or short bursts of intense exercise. What do we think? Short bursts. Yeah.
Very good.
We can go home.
We're done. Thanks, everybody.
I don't think we're teaching him anything. Yeah. So there was one trial. So they compared three different types of exercise. Okay, so either an hour four times a week where you're working at about 50% of your maximum capacity. Another group did 40 minutes at 75% of their maximum effort. So a bit more intense, a bit shorter. And then another group did five sets of five, basically all out sprints and 5 minutes rest. And they repeated that five times. The group that did the high-intensity interval training increased their VO2 max by more than double the people that were doing the endurance training. And so we really find that when you're doing these short intervals of around 3 to 5 minutes, you're really working hard. I mean, you are out of breath. You need to stop and breathe after that. Followed by a rest, you repeat this over and over again. That is what we find is the best for increasing VO2 max.
Why does the body respond like that? That's so interesting, because I would think that the endurance and like going pretty hard for 40 minutes or 50 minutes, whichever the case, you're taxing the lungs, you're taxing the heart for a longer period of time. So naturally they would be bigger, stronger, better performing. Not necessarily the case. What is it about those short bursts that make the body say, oh, this is how you do it?
Well, that's how we test it, right? So when we do the VO2 max testing, someone's on the treadmill, you just keep increasing the speed until they essentially can't go any longer. So we're trying to look at how efficient is our body when we're really pushing hard. And when we keep pushing to that limit, that's how our body adapts and improves. If you're just kind of chugging along, it is still important and it should form the base of our exercise. We should all be doing it. That type of training. But when it comes to making your body really efficient at using oxygen, the HIIT training seems to be a lot better.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Push your body till you basically collapse.
It is a lot of fun.
Does that sound like fun to anybody else?
It is a lot of fun.
Okay.
But the other thing is, we don't need to all go out and do sprints on the treadmill now. Let's make that clear. It's based on your effort. So if you're not at the point where you can sprint, just going and walking really fast around the block for 5 minutes, taking a break. And as you get fitter, you slowly increase that. It's about meeting yourself wherever you're at and improving from there. We're not talking about only elite athletes here. Doesn't need to be a flat out sprint on the treadmill, but as long as you're pushing yourself, your body will adapt.
Yeah. Well, see, that's good to know. I don't know that I could go like full born, like Olympic type sprinting, like right out of the gate. Like I'm just looking toward the end of the shopping center. I'm like, damn, that is a long way, man.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe I could do that.
Imagine there's a tofu quinoa from Green Fair and you're sprinting towards to get the last one on the counter.
I mean, I got you and I'll get that one. I don't know if I could do like 10 of those. I don't know, but whatever. Anyway, so that's just really interesting. Now, when you go to the gym and you hop on the treadmill, do you wear the funky mask?
No, I don't.
No,
I don't have that. No, you need to go to special testing facilities to get that done.
Well, I've seen athletes, you know, and even dudes in the gym, that's restricting
that.
Their oxygen intake, isn't it?
No, I don't do that.
Does anybody here have the funky mask that they go to the gym with? What?
No.
Ah, of course the fitness trainer does. All right. Does it really restrict the oxygen? Audio medium. Yes, it does. Do you ever get to a point where you feel like you're going to pass out wearing those things?
Yes.
Do you feel?
Different settings. So you can make the hole smaller and smaller and smaller, so you get less and less oxygen.
While you're on the treadmill, less oxygen.
And you're saying my ideas sound like torture.
Dude, for real. I don't know. Again, does that sound like fun to anybody else? I'd do it though. Just once. Just I appreciate you. I'll still come talk to your group. Anyway. Yeah. All right.
We
so that's
try that
that's
at some point.
I know, right? For real. I want to do it because like I've seen a lot of athletes, like high level professional athletes, wear this stuff, and I'm like, all right, well, they're probably getting a boost out of this because I liken it to like baseball was the first sport that I absolutely fell in love with, and in the batter's box in the on deck circle. And they will swing with a bat that's much heavier than the one that they'll actually go to the plate with. Mm. So that when they get to the plate with the lighter bat, they can get it around quicker and generate more power. I would imagine this is kind of the same thing. You're working harder and harder. So when you eventually take it off, like you're just going to breathe
easier. Feels like you can breathe again. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Tony Braxton.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. So that's VO2 max.
And just another thing, while, you know, it's important for we're talking about all-cause mortality and we're just talking about physical fitness, but even if we look at things like surgeries, we find that when people have a higher VO2 max, they tend to have better outcomes, even when it comes to things like cancer resection and triple bypass. We see that when people have a better baseline physical fitness before they go into surgery, they do much better. They have fewer complications. They have better outcomes. They often have shorter hospital duration. So even though we may feel healthy now, it's also important that we kind of prepare for these unexpected things that can happen as well. Mm. And by focusing on improving our fitness now, we are giving ourselves the best opportunity for anything that can really come up down the line. We're making our bodies more resilient so that if we face unexpected challenges, our body is more resilient when it comes.
How soon is it to start factoring that in? Like say somebody is recovering from a procedure, but they weren't in the best shape of their life going into it, right? Obviously they can't go from having a very serious surgery, being in really rough shape, to hopping on the treadmill, wearing the funky mask and getting measured. So how does one start to take those initial first steps?
I'm going to say chat to your cardiologist first. Get cleared, get medically cleared. Good. I don't want to give out medical advice like that here. But no, seriously, chat to your physician. And once they've cleared you, then you start slow and you slowly build it up.
Right on. Yeah, because I'm just thinking back to my own experience like with weight loss surgery, 420 pounds. There's like no way like I had any kind of good VO2 max. And like,
and you probably felt pretty crappy coming out of a surgery.
You have no idea. Oh my God, that was the worst day of my life. It was just god awful. Just couldn't walk. It was, anyway, I'm glad to be in the position I'm in today, for real.
Yeah.
Strength. I want to go back to strength. Just kind of going down the order here.
Yeah. Let's talk about strength.
Feats of strength. Mm. We're talking about building muscles. Yeah. How does I see you doing your curls, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Getting excited about this. So it's like, what is a good assessment of one's strength? Is it like going up to some random dude, like the biggest dude that you see at the grocery store, like you want to arm wrestle?
Yes.
And that's how you get
your
measurement?
That's exactly like, how we do it.
What is the doctor's assessment?
No, I'm kidding. You would beat me.
I don't know about that, miss. I get up and go to the gym at 5 a.m. But seriously, like what is the doctor's assessment of strength? It can't all be like just big bulging biceps, right?
Yeah. So when it comes to research, the most common metric of measuring strength is actually just grip strength.
Grip strength?
Grip strength.
Really?
You've seen those metal clips where you squeeze them and it gives you an indicator of your grip strength. And it's not just the hands, because if you squeeze your arm really tightly, your forearms are working, your biceps, your shoulders, you can feel it all the way up your arm. It's very difficult to be strong without having good grip strength. Mm. And so a lot of the research looks at grip strength. And Dean and Aisha Shirzai recently shared a study where it found that people who have a lower grip strength have a 1.5 times higher risk of Alzheimer's. Yeah,
really?
You don't think that the brain and the hand are connected, but it's more that the grip strength is an indicator of your overall physical ability. Hmm. And so when we look at grip strength, we see that all-cause mortality goes down. We see that cardiovascular disease risk goes down, and it starts with grip strength. So that's a great measure. Better than the, I don't even know what they're called.
The squeeze thingies?
I think it's a dynamometer. That's the one. Better than that is if you can dead hang off of a bar. So if there's a bar in the gym and you can just hold your body weight, that is a great measure of strength.
For how long?
And that's the question.
I think I got a second in me, maybe two.
If you can get to 30 seconds, that's good.
Nice qualifier.
Ideally.
Everybody was feeling really good until you're like, for 30 seconds.
Ideally, women should aim for 90 seconds and men should aim for 2 minutes. But you can increase that really slowly. So you just test it out, see how long you can hang. If you can't do it unsupported, put a box under your feet so it takes a little bit of the weight off, but you're still getting that stimulus. And then you just slowly increase it. A good way is by doing intervals, just like we're talking about with the HIIT workouts, the cardiovascular fitness. You hang on the bar for 10 seconds, rest for 10. Hang for 10, rest for 10. That's too easy. If you do that 4 times, you increase it to 15 seconds. And rest.
Gwen, can we set up a bar for Dr. Becker? Just see how she does.
Yeah.
Are we talking about alcohol? Gwen's got jokes tonight. She took her funny pills.
She does.
Yeah, I don't even know how long I could do that. That would be fun. Yeah. That should be a segment. You were wondering about how can I build social media.
You should question me hanging on a bar and then we'll reverse the roles.
Done. Dear Dr. Barnard, I would like to requisition a bar for the studio. Thank you.
Yes.
No, not that kind of bar. Roxy wants to hang
there. I
don't
think you would be very excited about that.
No. Doctor, that would be fun, though. That'd be, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me 2 months, and I bet you I could hang longer than you.
Okay.
Give me 2 months. Bet.
We have a lot of witnesses here.
I didn't say which 2 months. Calm down. This could be like 2029, y'all. Like, pace yourself.
Oh,
2029. You're right. By July 2029, I got you. Done. Nice, healthy grip, by the way. Nice, healthy grip. So, all right. Yeah, there's a couple people I shook hands with. I like had like nice, firm handshakes. Like Pericles here at Green Fair. He's got a heck of a handshake. John, who's floating around, he's got a nice handshake, right?
Yeah.
Strongest handshake I ever had, though, was a football player, a guy by the name of Dexter Manley. And like this guy, like his whole thing is like, can I make the person cry when I shake their hand? Like this is his game. This is how he gets his jollies.
Wow.
I did not shed a tear outwardly. Inside, I was a wreck. That was a hell of a hand. He doesn't even give you a chance. It's like he's just going in and
just goes
like,
all
bam.
In.
I was like, mommy, nice to meet you. Anyway, all right, so grip strength, like that's so bizarre, like of all the muscles to like measure, it's like grip strength.
Again, it's just an overall measure of your physical capacity. Mm. Aside from dead hangs, doing farmer's carry, so walking with weights, get it, dumbbells, kettlebells from the gym, you just hold them, walk up and down. Fantastic exercise, very underrated. Anything where you're holding weights, deadlifts. And I think what's important, when I talk about these exercises, often people think, sounds like bodybuilding exercises. Like that sounds very vain. You know, people are just doing it for the aesthetics. But when we look at these exercises, they are mimicking the movements that we're doing in real life. So if you think about squatting, how does that help you? Well, as you age, you want to be able to sit down and stand up without needing assistance. So squats help to practice that movement. Deadlifts. We're picking up groceries. We're picking up bags from the floor, doing something overhead. We're putting things on the top shelf or lifting kids, grandkids. When you're lifting dumbbells, those are the movements that you're training for. So it's important to also have this idea that when we go to the gym, it's not just to get in our minutes of movement. It's not, you know, just to tick off another box, but we are training for life when we do these things. It's to help us, give us the best opportunity to be as functional as we can when we age. Because once you lose independence, it's
really hard to get it back.
It's really hard to get it back.
Yeah. I know people who have unfortunately kind of like giving up their independence. And I'm not going to say like it was a voluntary thing. I'm not sure that they truly understood the ramification. I think that there's still a certain percentage of the population that's like, I'm old and this is how it's supposed to be because this is how it was for my parents and my parents' parents and their parents before them. People still don't understand like the amount of power that they have regardless of their age.
Yeah.
Like you use the term difficult to get it back. I didn't hear you say impossible.
Mm-hmm.
That's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Very important distinction.
You can get it back to some degree.
That said,
But again, prevention is a lot easier.
I think so. But do you necessarily have to go to the gym to do a lot of these things? I've never been a huge gym guy.
You're not?
Despite the fact that I love sports.
It's my favorite place in the world.
No.
Maybe that's why I don't have many friends.
Yeah, and you're about to lose one now with that mentality. Like, yeah, for real. Like, I don't know. Like, for as much as I love sports, I just never really got behind the gym thing. Like, I would much rather be out walking or, you know, just doing push-ups at home or whatever the case may be. Show of hands here, and this one is okay for hand showing. How many people here love to go to the gym? How many people would prefer to go for a walk at home or walk or work out at home, right? So it's about 2/3, like, let me walk, let me work out at home, and 1/3 of your people.
My people.
Your people. Yeah.
Make it sound like I'm in a cult.
Aren't you, though? Aren't you? Hi, Robert Cheek. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so for the 2/3 majority, my people, who do like to walk and work out at home, what are some things that, you know, we should be doing to really start to build those muscles?
Yeah. Great question.
I know.
This is why you're the master interviewer. Thank you. Well, you start with body weight. Things like push-ups, sitting down to a chair and standing up. If that gets too easy, there are a lot of different ways that you can either up the intensity or add weight. So you can use resistance bands at home, get a couple of bands. You can use that to do bicep curls, or you just change the pace at which you do something. So instead of just going up and down as fast as you can, you slow, do 3 seconds down, and then stand quickly up. So there are ways of increasing the intensity of exercise at home without needing access to a gym. Mm. That being said, the way to build strength and muscle mass is progressive overload. So continually increasing the stimulus, using heavier weights. So if you can do that, even if you just get a couple of 5-10 pound dumbbells to have at home so you have that extra weight, that's a great way to do it. And there's no problem with training at home.
All right, let me ask you this, right? I know that you live right next to 2 grocery stores. Do you like stock up on canned goods just so you can do bicep curls with the bags?
Yes.
Do you?
While I walk home, I walk home doing bicep curls with my grocery bags.
That's not awkward at all. Hi.
Just make eye contact as you walk past someone.
Well, nobody's going to mess with you. Like, yeah, she's out of her mind, man. And she's jacked. Like, that's a crazy combo. Nah, man. All right. So that's good to know, because I know, again, like, working with Maxim Segoin and Fit Vegan, like, his big thing is,
he's
like,
fantastic.
Work out where you are. If you want to go to the gym and do it, great. If not, we'll work out with you at home. Like, and he's like, the gains are virtually identical. So that's one of the things that I do like to stress, is that, you know, jokes aside, you can have the same type of results at home as you would in the gym. With some limitations, you're probably not going to get to be the world's strongest man or world's strongest woman doing push-ups on your own at home. But I don't think anybody here is going to be, you know, looking to get on ESPN2 at 11 o'clock Saturday night on the strongest person competition. So that's important to keep in mind.
Yes.
Which actually, like, those guys are super jacked. Have you seen these competitions?
Which competitions?
The, like, World's Strongest Man competitions, where they're, like, throwing
South kicks. Africa just won the World's Strongest Man competition.
Of course she would know that.
Yes.
She's from South Africa.
I'm from South Africa. That's why I feel very proud at the moment.
All right. So, Mr. Superjack South African, I don't know his name. Do you know his name?
Oh, I've forgotten. Oh, he's Afrikaans.
Some fan you are. Good glory. Anyway, like, are these guys just going to live forever? Because the stats that I've seen is, like, these guys kind of have short lifespans, but they got a lot of muscle here. So how much is too much?
Again, it's not just one thing. So if you look at these, and I'm not speaking about anyone in particular.
Generalities.
Generally speaking. It also, again, how did these guys get to be as big as they were? Are they using performance-enhancing drugs? That's an important question. What is their diet like? Because we also need to talk about protein at some point. And a lot of people who are doing these, if it's, you know, bodybuilding competitions or strongman competitions, a lot of them do eat a lot of animal protein. And we know that that's not good for us. You can be really fit, but the food that you're putting in your body is still going to negatively affect your health if you're putting the wrong food into your body. So they think that animal protein, great for short-term gains, but then it's at the risk of their long-term health. And so we've actually seen, as you substitute just 3% of your calories, which I mean, that's not much. It's maybe 60 calories. How many calories are in an egg? It's like substituting an egg for a quarter cup of beans. Again, reduces your risk of dying from any causes by 10%. That's just one substitution. And interestingly, in this one large study, they actually found that the biggest benefit came from replacing eggs with plant protein. Really? And I know there's a lot of debate about eggs online. I don't want to start a debate here. But they actually found that the greatest benefits came from replacing eggs with plant protein from beans, nuts, seeds, grains. And so it also comes down to what they're eating.
Now, I'm not going to ask you the question is, you know, plant protein, can you get enough of it and be adequate? But like, how does the body react to that plant protein versus the animal protein? Does it absorb it and put it to work in the same way as animal protein? Like, is it as effective? Like, seriously, straight shoot me here. Is it as effective as, say, eating steak, chicken, the egg?
Yeah. And that's been tested a lot. And there are a couple reasons why there is this confusion with plant-based proteins. Plant proteins come with a lot of fiber. Okay, we know that fiber can sometimes slow down the absorption of certain nutrients, including protein to an extent. But we measure protein digestibility and we give them scores. So you may have heard that plant protein is less digestible than animal protein. It's less bioavailable. Have you heard these online? Things like that. But the problem is when we're comparing the digestibility and absorbability of plant protein versus animal proteins, we're scoring them in animal models using rats and pigs. I don't think anyone here looks like a rat or a pig. They're a bit cuter than most people in this room. I'd probably rather be hanging out with a little rat than you. No offense, Chuck. But we're
That's the end of the show. Everybody's welcome to stay except you. Have a wonderful evening.
I'm so cute and fluffy.
But I'm me. Okay.
Yeah, you're
fluffy.
You're a little fluffy. But these scoring systems, again, they use animals. Our anatomy, our physiology is very different from animals. So we can't directly apply that. These scoring systems also use raw beans and raw grains when they are assessing the digestibility of plant protein. Now, when's the last time you went and had a cup of raw kidney beans? Hey. You're not going to get any protein from that. You're probably not even going to swallow that. You'll probably chip a tooth have to go see the dentist. In theory, there are some benefits of testing protein digestibility, but there are a lot of limitations that we're not talking about. But what's more important than the theory is how does this actually work when we put it to the test in people? Because that's what we want to know. We can talk about these fancy scoring systems until we go blue in the face, but how does it affect you and me and everyone in this room when we're actually eating these foods?
Right.
And so there have been many randomized control trials. People come in, they don't know which group they're joining, so they don't get, you know, it's not a selection bias. You can't choose which group you're joining. And whether protein comes from plants or animals, they have the same effect in stimulating muscle growth and strength gains as long as the overall protein is kept the same.
Interesting.
So it doesn't matter if you're getting it from whey protein or pea protein supplements, if you're getting it from eggs or you're getting it from beans, as long as you're getting enough total protein to support your goals, doesn't matter where those amino acids come from.
Interesting.
Way they're packaged then does obviously affect our health. No. Whether the protein's coming packaged with fiber and antioxidants versus saturated fat and heme iron and all of the rest.
What's the better diet for building muscle quickly? The keto diet, which focuses primarily on protein, or a plant-based diet, which is more well-rounded in every nutrient under the sun?
As long as the plant-based diet is getting sufficient protein to support the gains, I would say the plant-based diet. Because then again, you're also getting the antioxidants, which help you to recover faster, help you to push harder in the gym the next day. And again, we see when athletes start following a plant-based diet, first thing they notice is their recovery improves. Yeah, absolutely. And as their recovery improves, they're able to train harder, train more frequently. And it comes with a lot of other benefits for athletes, but There's a lot of detail in that. So I would say plant-based diets would be better for building muscle because as long as the protein is there, it's the same as whether you're getting your protein from animals, but it also has other added benefits such as improved recovery for athletes.
What is ballpark me here? I know that there's a convoluted formula for the amount of protein that the typical person needs, but generally speaking, how many grams per day are we talking here?
It depends on a couple of things. It depends on body weight and it depends on your goals. So I know it's easy to throw out a single number for everyone, but that's not
right.
That's not right. So for someone who is active and trying to optimize their longevity, doing a bit of resistance training, and I had to convert this from grams per kilogram to grams per pound. So I hope I've done the correct
conversions. Welcome to America. There you go.
But anywhere from around 0.54 grams per pound of body weight to around 0.72. That's about 1.2 to 1.6 grams per kilogram.
Right on.
That's best for building muscle. We can get higher than that. And it can be beneficial in someone who is, for example, an elite bodybuilder. They're really trying to maintain as much muscle mass as they're really low on calories. But for the average person, we don't need that much. And then again, what is the opportunity cost of that? If you're eating so much protein, you're leaving out a bunch of other nutrients. Mm. So if you can stay within that range, that's a good amount for most people, I would say.
Is there a toxic threshold where there's too much protein in the system? Does it become dangerous at some point?
Not really in the short term. But in terms of long term, the more animal protein specifically, the higher the risk of cardiovascular disease, cancers, and all of that.
Gotcha.
The short-term risk would more be then that you're just not getting the other nutrients that you need.
So what happens if somebody's doing a bunch of dead hangs, maybe 300 push-ups, a bunch of sit-ups, all kinds of things, but they're not getting enough protein. They're just working the muscles. Is there a zero benefit there? Uh-oh. I don't want to call anybody out by name. But that's all right. How you doing over there?
Hello.
Good to see you. All right. Anyway, so the question is, what happens if somebody's not getting enough protein, but they're doing a ton of push-ups, sit-ups, dead hangs? What's going to happen to their muscle then?
They may build a bit of muscle, but not as much as they could. So they obviously haven't optimized that. And then you'll find if someone is exercising too frequently and too intensely without adequate nutrition, yeah, just burn out. Mm. It's not sustainable. You can't keep going. Mm. So fueling is really important.
All right.
Still benefit though, still exercise.
Is it possible to, because here's another one that we've talked about on the show previously. Dr. Barnard and I have talked a lot about bone density. Mm-hmm. And bone density and strength training seem to go hand in hand. What's the key to getting those nice, dense bones?
Yeah. The key comes to prevention, firstly. So again, similar to muscle mass and muscle strength, our bone density peaks when we're in about our 30s. For men, it then slowly starts to decline. Women, we go through a more rapid decline during menopause because we lose estrogen, and estrogen is really important for bone health. It stops our bone from breaking down. And so when we lose that estrogen, our bone mineral density tends to drop a lot faster than males of the same age. Generally speaking, when we're doing resistance training, we are trying to prevent the decline of bone mineral density loss. There is some research to say that you can improve it slightly, especially if you are postmenopausal. You can still build a bit of, you can still improve it a bit. But for the most part, we are trying to prevent it from declining more. So it really does peak in our 30s. Most important thing, obviously you need calcium, you need your vitamin D for bone health, but the most important thing for keeping that bone mineral density up is resistance training.
Right on.
And things like walking, cycling, it doesn't quite have the same impact as doing something like weight training. So we need to be putting those bones under stress because then they react by reinforcing it. It's like a road. If you have 3 cars driving down a little dirt road every day, that road doesn't have to be that strong. If it's under pressure, like a big 5-lane highway with lots of cars, needs to be reinforced. As we're doing resistance training, our bones are getting the message that, hey, we need to be reinforced. We need to be able to withstand that pressure. And so putting our bones under tension through resistance training is potentially the best thing that we can do for our bones.
A couple things. One, try not to hit the table. That's just a pro tip. That's probably
am I hitting too much?
A little bit. Might get picked up on the mic. But you mentioned vitamin D and you mentioned calcium. Mm. There's a big debate over whether or not people as we get older should be supplementing with that, both men and women. What does the research show in terms of bone density and overall bone health when it comes to supplementation?
With vitamin D, you can get it from the sun. That is the optimum choice. Again, wear some sunscreen. We want to protect our skin as well. For anyone who is not getting enough sun, you should be taking a supplement, whether you're vegan, whether you're not. You know, people in the UK should probably be on a supplement all year round. Their weather looks absolutely miserable. But if you
Hi, Gemma Newman. Hi.
Sorry, Gemma. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong
Hi, Alan Deffin.
Great people. Hope they'll be at ICNM this year.
I don't know after those comments.
If they are, come to the conference. They're wonderful human beings. But anyone who's not getting enough sunlight should be taking a vitamin D supplement. And again, it's always better to test than guess. So test your levels. If you are low, take a supplement. You can get more than enough calcium from plant-based sources like your leafy greens, your nuts and seeds, great sources of calcium. A lot of plant-based milks and tofu is fortified with calcium, especially that calcium-set tofu, so you can get a lot of calcium from there. And again, test your levels, do the bone scans. If you need to supplement, but I don't like putting supplements out there as a broad generalization because we tend to overdo it. We'll go to Whole Foods, get a multivitamin, get something for bone health, get something for hormone support. Next thing, we're taking 25 pills and our diet still looks like absolute crap. And people often do that. You take a supplement, you think, you know, that is now fixing my diet. It's not. Supplements are always there to supplement your diet. You should first and foremost be making sure that you're optimizing your diet, getting as many nutrients from your diet as you can before you even look to supplements.
True or false, there's research out there that says that people who supplement with calcium or vitamin D can be at a higher risk of fractures as they get older.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen that research.
You could fact check me. Mm. You can absolutely fact check me. You're shooting me the evil eye.
No, I'm not shooting you. I'm not shooting the evil eye.
We didn't talk about this beforehand.
No,
what are you doing right
question.
Now? I'm pretty sure it exists.
It's a good question.
I'm fairly confident. I'm like 95% confident on that.
We'll talk about it in the next show we do.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll loop back
like
to that.
Let's see. What else did you want me to ask you? Aside from strength, what is the importance of having lean muscle? So
that is a great question.
Yeah, this is important, right? So like right now, I feel like my lean muscle is gone and a lot of the fluff that I work so hard to like take off has come roaring back. I can't stand that. It's just where I'm at right now with my health reality. We will get this changed. I will, you know, slim back down. But without this, a lot of lean muscle on me right now, like what kind of danger is my body in? Why am I not healthfully aging at this point? Or at least optimally aging, I should say.
Optimally aging.
Thank you.
Is a buzzword.
Sugarcoat that one. Age optimally.
Yeah.
Talk to me. Lean muscle.
Lean muscle is really important for metabolic health. If you think about it, muscle is one of the biggest glucose utilizers in the body. So if we're thinking about preventing type 2 diabetes, making sure that we remain insulin sensitive, it's important to have enough lean muscle on our body so that we can utilize glucose. The other thing is that lean muscle burns around 3 times more calories than the same weight of fat. So it's not going to, you know, change the world, but if you have more lean muscle, you're burning more calories at rest. So it does help us to also maintain a healthy body weight. And even for things like if you look at, for example, people in the ICU, if you are admitted to the ICU with a critical condition, you know, you're laying there, you're not moving around, you're obviously going to lose muscle mass. And it can be really dramatic. It can be 1.5 to 2% of your lean muscle mass per day in the ICU. Mm. So within the first week, people lose an average of 15% of their muscle if they're in ICU.
Whoa.
And that also correlates with their clinical outcomes. So we see they've measured the muscle mass of people at the start of their ICU stay in the end, and they find that people who have more lean muscle mass when they're admitted for any reason, it could be cancer, it could be surgery, it could be a traumatic accident, they have better clinical outcomes, fewer complications. Clinical outcomes mean you know, they have a higher chance of surviving and doing well. Fewer complications and even a shorter duration in how many days they're in ICU. Wow. So again, building that baseline while we have the capacity, while we're healthy enough to do that, is really going to, again, improve our body's resilience and give our body the best chance that it can when we face these unexpected events.
Why does the muscle erode so quickly? Does our body turn to muscle, lean muscle, before it does fat cells for, you know, fuel as you're just kind of lying there?
So, I mean, you will lose fat as well. You lose your total body weight.
Right.
But when someone is critically ill, they're in such a catabolic state. They're breaking down their bodily tissues because, I mean, it's an exhaustive process. Your body is trying to cope with all the extra inflammation from whether it's a surgery or infection or whatever condition it is. And we tend to just break down muscle. And again, if you don't use it, you lose it. Mm. So you're lying there. You're not moving. We're not walking around. We're not, you know, moving our muscles. And so as we don't use them and our body's in this catabolic state, we just tend to break it down very quickly.
Can I ask you what is potentially the dumbest question that's ever been asked on the show before? And maybe somebody else is wondering this as well, and they just secretly are like, man, I don't want to sound stupid, but I'll take one for the team. You're talking about lean muscle. Is there such a thing as fat muscle?
No.
Did anybody else ever wonder that? No? Oh, we got one. Thank you. God bless you, ma'am. Thank you. I'm not alone.
We call it lean muscle mass, lean body mass. There are a lot of different words, but no, there's no lean mass. And it's a great question, though.
It's not. We got like 50-some-odd people here, and there's only two in here who are wondering it. Like, it is the dumbest question I've ever asked. No offense, ma'am. But again, I'm right there with you. Jeez Louise, talk about raising my health IQ. I'm starting at the basement level. Like, so why not just call it muscle, doc?
That's a good point.
I mean, we just overcomplicate crap. Jeez
All right,
Louise.
Let's start again from the beginning. I'll just call it
muscle. No, I think that's important. I'm standing by it, right? Fat muscle, lean muscle. Let's do muscle. Muscle. All right, so then let's kind of put a bow on this conversation. You obviously need an adequate amount of protein to build your lean muscle mass, correct?
Correct. Right?
But it doesn't necessarily need to be from an animal source.
No.
Plant-based proteins are just as good as animal sources, if not better. What am I missing? You want to add anything to that? Lean muscle or otherwise? Come on.
And it's never too late to start. We said that in the beginning, and I think that's important to mention it again.
Right.
Whether you know, are someone who has never exercised a day in their life, you're 70, 80 years old, you've got osteopenia, osteoporosis, your bones are weak, even then, it's never too late to start. And you will still see benefits by including any exercise in your life. And something else I've just been seeing it a lot online, especially with fitness influencers who have recently given birth and they go back to their training. And a lot of people are saying, that's so selfish of you. You know, you have a child. How are you taking time out of your day to now go and exercise instead of being a mom?
What?
Oh, it's a huge thing. It's a huge thing online.
They're getting mom shamed for that? Like
For exercising, yeah.
No.
Yeah, they really are.
No, that's garbage. And I'm going to tell you why it's garbage, because the mom is investing in her health.
I'm just reporting what I'm seeing.
Her mom is investing in her health so she can take better care of the baby. She can be around longer. Like, she can be like, that is literally, whoever said that, I mean, no offense to us guys, but that's got to be guys who are saying that.
A lot of it comes from women as well. Right. A lot of the comments come from women online.
All right. But let me talk right to camera. If you say that, you need to get your head adjusted. And that's all I got to say about that. That's a thing.
No, it's crazy, but it's everywhere. And I think that being fit and healthy, again, I'm not a mom. I'm not talking from personal experience, but from seeing my mom get in the best shape of her life after going through perimenopause, knowing that she is fit and capable and healthy is one of the best gifts that she can give to my brother and I.
Yeah, yeah.
Knowing that she's going to be around, if they're grandkids, she'll be able to play with them. She would be excited to hear that.
Well, at the risk of getting canceled, I will preface also by saying I'm a happily married man. Your mom is hot. Like, she is really an attractive woman.
Yeah. So in high school, you know that song Stacey's Mom?
Yeah.
They changed the lyrics to Roxy's Mom and sang it everywhere I went.
I mean, unbelievable. How you doing? You know? It's like
she's
Joey
got a six-pack that,
I know.
That bodybuilders will...
Like, your mom...
How do you know?
You showed me a picture.
You're not supposed to tell her that I showed you that picture.
Oh, sorry, Mom. How you doing? Anyway, come on to D.C. Anyway, my wife and I would love to take you and your daughter out for dinner. There you go. Anyway, now that you're thoroughly
And she's a great example because, you know, she only really started strength training and improving her fitness and everything when she was in her 40s and 50s. And now she's about to be 55 and she is in the best shape of her life. She puts me to shame. It's quite annoying because every time I go home, she wants to go for runs. And I'm like, I just want to relax. And, nope, this is where I get the 5 a.m. from. You got to be up at 5 in the morning, go for a long run. But even just doing that, it's such a wonderful bonding experience to have with a parent, to be able to do those things with a parent. And so, again, whatever age you are, one of the biggest blessings and gifts that you can give your family is just training and being fit and being healthy and being able and around.
Are y'all competitive? Like, who can go faster?
She can.
Who can dead hang longer?
Me.
We'll
test it. We'll have to put up a pull-up bar at ICNM if she comes.
What's
and
the
we'll
grip
test
strength
it.
Then, huh? Who's got the better grip strength? Like, is it like Festivus at your house around the holidays where you have the feats of strength and you guys are just like wrestling?
It was like the CrossFit Games in the house.
I don't mess with the Beckers, man.
No, she puts me to shame. She can, she can run really, really well.
All right, let's end by talking about how somebody might go about really just starting to do things and build their own training program at home. So I think, you know, there's probably a lot of people who are like, yeah, I want to live longer, right? I want to be around longer. I want to build my body the best that I can. But I don't really know how to get started. Give me Dr. Becker's prescription for day one.
I would say be realistic with what you think you can commit to and what you think you can do. Again, no point in having a 6-day training program if that doesn't fit into your life. So be realistic with how long you can devote to exercise. And then I would say try and make sure that you have a little bit of strength training, a bit of endurance, and if you can manage a bit of the high intensity interval training. So it could look something like having 1 to 2, if you can, 3 days of strength training, whether that's, you know, doing push-ups and squats at home, climbing stairs at home, that sort of thing, or whether it's going to the gym. Start with that. Try and have 1 day where you're doing aerobic exercise at a lower intensity, so like a 45-minute cycle or walk on the treadmill, work it up to jogging, and then try do some of that interval training. And try build it up to where you've got around 3 to 4 days of resistance training, a day of endurance, and 1 to 3 days of the high-intensity training. And there are so many free resources on the website. There are so many apps, so many plant-based athletes like Maxim that can help people out. There are so many just free resources online. Yep. So you don't need to have a lot of information, a lot of equipment. Start where you are.
And again, I mean, if you are that program person, you can obviously check out Maxim's program, fitvegan.com, or the Vegan Gym, another fantastic group. I mean, there's a lot of people who can help get you going. But I think that my big takeaway is the VO2 max conversation that we began with. And what was that stat again? You raised it by what?
By 3.5.
Yeah.
The total number. Yeah. Most people are kind of sitting around 30 to 50, raise it by 3.5, and your risk of all-cause mortality is reduced by 20%.
Does it go down to 40% if you raise it by 7? if I'm like double aggressive on getting my VO2 max up, can I like see those huge gains?
It will add up. It does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good stat.
Yeah.
That's a good stat. Really are we leaving anything?
And again, it just takes 6 weeks of doing it and you can increase your VO2 max pretty quickly.
6 weeks. That's amazing. Anybody can commit to something for 6 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. That's really impressive.
Really
that's
is.
Really impressive.
Yeah.
Equally as impressive as you are 73 years old. So thanks. You know, the proof is in the pudding. Yeah. Somehow you're older than your mom. I don't know. Anyway.
It's getting weird.
This whole show's weird. I mean, that's how we got 150 million views, for goodness sakes. It's like I just try to be myself and ask evidently dumb questions. So anyway, Dr. Becker, thanks so very much for being here. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
You know, I am so excited to be back working out with Maxim Segoin at Fit Vegan Coaching again. And his program, it emphasizes body recomposition, which is just a fancy way of saying building muscles, getting back in shape, and of course, eating a healthy diet. And the cool thing about Maxim is that in his program, there are a lot of clients who are well beyond the age of 50. I think if memory serves, he even has someone in their late 80s currently working out with him, maybe even their early 90s. They go through the course and they get smashing results. So the big takeaway, like you heard today, it is never too late, my friend. And you can check out Maxim and Fit Vegan Coaching at fitvegancoaching.com or click the link down below in the episode notes. And yeah, Maxim has become a great ally in my recent health journey. He's kind of taken me under his wing as I build back the strength that I lost and battle my way back to tip-top shape. You know, it's funny as we kind of turn the page to version 3.0 here. That's what I feel like I'm doing. I'm going from 1.0. I've been 2.0 for a number of years, had that setback. Now I'm building back as 3.0. And it's funny because I was a big fan of walking. I mean, I still am. And along the way, I picked up yoga. But I really never have focused too much on muscle building. In fact, I felt weak. I didn't talk about this a lot, but I just never felt like I was as strong as I could be. So I'm excited to see how all of this turns out. And I have a sneaking suspicion that all of this working out will actually be a great stress reliever for me too. That's a big part of everything. So you can join me. Let's get fit together. Just hit up fitvegancoaching.com. And listen, you heard me talk about the special dollar for dollar match at the beginning of the show. We indeed do have some very special things happening at the Physicians Committee. Our team of researchers, they are literally behind some of the most influential health studies of our time, and now they need your help. Just think back to Dr. Hanna Kaliova, who was just on the show talking about microplastics. Well, she leads our clinical research here, research that is transforming how we prevent and even treat chronic health diseases, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, you name it. And her groundbreaking studies, our groundbreaking studies here at the Physicians Committee, they are fully funded by donations from members like you. Your dollars are saving lives. And so the exciting news is that until July 10th, your donations to the Physicians Committee will be doubled to support this life-saving work, dollar for dollar. It is an incredible $500,000 matching gift opportunity, and it is all thanks to one of our very generous members. The July 10th date is significant because this member lost his father one July 10th to what we now understand, thanks to our groundbreaking research, was a preventable disease. But for years, he watched as his father's health declined, no matter how many drugs his doctor prescribed, when all along, a simple shift toward an animal-free, plant-based diet might just have saved his father's life. Why didn't his doctor tell them? Why did the family only learn of this life-saving information after it was already too late? No family should be left asking these questions. And so that is why, in honor of his father and to help save lives, this generous member is offering a match to help advance PCRM's life-saving research into type 2 diabetes and other chronic health conditions that are plaguing Americans and their loved ones, maybe even someone in your life. So please help us unlock this match and continue this crucial work. Right now, PCRM.org/match is where you can go to give. PCRM.org/match. Please do not wait because this matching opportunity ends on July 10th. There is a link for your convenience right now in the episode notes. And for today, that is going to wrap things up. I want to say thank you one more time to Dr. Roxy Becker for being here and raising our health and longevity IQs. And for everyone at the Physicians Committee, I am the weight loss champion, Chuck Carroll. Thank you so very much for listening. And remember, as always, keep it plant-based.